This is the Senate Committee on Regional Affairs. With us, Senator Stedman, Senator Wagner, and myself, Stevens. We are dealing with two issues today, Senate Bill 171, and then later with House Bill 229. Senator Wilkin, I'm glad you could be with us, sir, and we're ready to learn.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Thank you for allowing me to come and spend some time with you to talk about the NPRA mitigation program. And let's get the water out of the way so I don't spill this. In your packets, just some things we're going to talk about today. You should, of course, have the bill. You have the sponsor statement, which I'd like to take the time to read in because I think it frames what we're going to see in the PowerPoint presentation. And you should have a PowerPoint presentation in front of you that is what we're going to see. And that should be the extent of your packets. There may be other things that come up that we have some backup material if needed. But with that, I would like to start with the sponsor statement, Mr. Chairman. And I think this is going to take perhaps about 40 minutes to get through, so with your indulgence. Senate Bill 171 examines the National Petroleum Reserve Alaska Mitigation Grant Program administered by the Department of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development and modifies the selection process to provide for active oversight by the legislature. The bounty of NPRA is thought by many to match or exceed the oil and gas deposits found at Prudhoe Bay and Kuparuk. As was mentioned in the Anchorage Daily News on February of 2005, the Bureau of Land Management estimates NPRA northeast corner could hold more than 2 billion barrels of crude oil and 3.5 trillion feet of natural gas. As Alaskans look forward to the time when they can enjoy the benefits of reasonable and responsible development of these natural... Oh, all Alaskans look forward to the time when they can enjoy the benefits of reasonable and responsible development of these natural resources. When members of the United States Congress authorized competitive leases in NPRA in 1980, they recognized that development in the petroleum reserve might severely impact communities in or near the area. The federal legislation directed that the revenue generated through NPRA development be used first to mitigate direct impacts, if any, to municipalities, and then by the rest of the state of Alaska. This federal directive in 1980 created two troubling issues that today pose significant problems. The first, the federal legislation is in direct conflict with the Alaska State Constitution. The state of Alaska receives from the federal government 50% of royalties and lease payments from oil and gas development in NPRA. As required by federal law, these funds are available before consideration of any other public purpose to communities that demonstrate impact from resource development in NPRA. This directive is at odds with the Article 9, Section 15 of our Constitution, which we all know states at least 25% of all mineral lease rentals, royalties, royalty sale proceeds, federal mining revenue sharing payments, and bonuses received by the state shall be placed in a permanent fund. Senate Bill 171 recognizes this unsettling conflict, but does not overtly address or remedy the conflict between our Constitution and federal law. This issue, while bothersome, is set aside for another day. Instead, this legislation speaks to the second troubling issue of how the federal NPRA payments are distributed to Alaskan communities that may be severely impacted by oil and gas and development within the NPRA. With the sizable increase in NPRA lease payments since 2000 and with the clear expectation of future and profitable growth, now is the time to revisit how the NPRA payments are distributed and why. It is the charge of the legislature to devise a method to fairly allocate the financial benefit of NPRA to all citizens of Alaska, while at the same time recognize and mitigate the direct impact of development on certain communities as required by federal law. In response to a 1986 Alaska Superior Court decision, Senate Bill 171 sets in place a system to grant impact assistance to municipalities most directly or severely impacted by oil and gas activity within the NPRA. First, the Department of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development shall review and conduct a preliminary evaluation of each grant application to determine whether the community can demonstrate, quote, extraordinary municipal and educational operating expenditures attributable to oil and gas development and NPRA that are beyond the municipality's reasonable capability to meet, close quote. The department will submit a list of all qualifying projects to the legislature. Second, the Special Legislative Oil and Gas NPRA Development Impact Review Committee, composed of three Senate finance members and three House representative finance members, will review the submitted applications and within 45 days forward the committee's recommendation to the respective finance committees for possible funding. And third, 25% of the NPRA payments will be deposited to the Principal Alaska Permanent Fund and 0.5% to the Public School Trust Fund as required under state law. If the amounts awarded to qualified municipalities as grants exceed the available money, each deposit in the previously mentioned funds and each grant will be reduced proportionately. And last, a successful grantee shall submit to the Department of Commerce, Community Economic Development a financial report and a copy of an independent audit or review covering any previous grants before any subsequent grants are awarded. But that is the sponsor statement. I appreciate you allowing me to read that in, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to turn now to the PowerPoint presentation. And if someone might just, Tim, would you mind correcting that? Those lights?
Do you want to move around or can you see it? I'm all right.
Presentation to this committee. This presentation has four chapters, and we'll see this sheet as we go through. We're going to first talk about the conflict between our Constitution and the federal law. Then we're going to talk about the impact mitigation program as we see it today. Then we're going to talk about this little word called impact and its importance in this legislation, and then Senate Bill 171. So first, let's start with the program today. Well, where is NPRA? We've all heard of it, and you can see it's about the size of Indiana. Here's the Trans-Alaska Pipeline. As you see, here's the 1002 area. Here's all the development in Kuparuk, Prudhoe Bay, and Alpine over here. And this is an area we're going to talk a lot about as we walk through this right here. Here's Point Barrow. Here's Wainwright, Akasuk, and Nuitsit is right there. The dark is native lands. Little history, two pages of history. Back in 1923, President Harding established the NPR, National Petroleum Reserve, when there was obvious seeps of oil laying all over the North Slope. The Department of Interior in 1976 assumed jurisdiction of that and changed the name. And then in 1980, Congress addressed changes to the NPRA. And they authorized competitive leases in the NPRA. It cleared the way for private development, to the joy of many in the state, of the resources. And they set forth that Alaska would receive 50% of the total revenues from NPRA, and we would compare that to the 90-10 that we had been used to getting in other places. But so we now get 50% split to half between the feds and half between the state of Alaska. And the legislature responded to this new federal law. And in Senate Bill 835, in 1982, they established a special revenue fund within the Department of Revenue. And as money started to come in the early 80s, half of the receipts were appropriated to communities affected by leasing, were to be appropriated to communities affected by leasing, and the other half would be available for state appropriation. But Governor Hammond vetoed this, and he said, "The dedication of such federal monies appears to be inconsistent with the dedication of revenue to the Alaska Permanent Fund. It clearly violated Article 9, Section 15, and the governor recognized that in his veto message." So the legislature went back to work because of that, and they didn't have any specific laws. So up into the early 80s, there had been about $49 million received from lease payments. I think they were from NPRA. The state went ahead and deposited half into the permanent fund and a half a percent into the school trust fund, and then the rest were put into the general fund. So this calculation, back then, there's $48.6 million in receipts. Half went to our permanent fund, 0.5% to the public schools, and we had a little over $24 million left over for grants to impacted communities. But in 1985, the North Slope Borough and the four communities sued, and they said the law in place violated the federal law, and they wanted their request for relief was a rational process for communities to apply for grants. They wanted a declaration that all MPRA funds be automatically deposited into a revenue fund and available for grants, and they wanted a system to separately account for the receipt of MPRA funds, and they wanted to reconstitute the Special Reserve Fund. This is not unlike the Mental Health Trust issue that was before the legislature some years ago. So they went to court, and in 1986, Judge Carpinetti issued a judgment, and he said three main things. He said that the state is required to establish a system to grant impact assistance to subdivisions most directly or severely impacted by MPRA activity. He said that the automatic deposits to the permanent fund violated the federal law. This is the tension that we talked about earlier. And under our Constitution, the federal law controls this activity. So the judge, in his essence, found in favor of the plaintiffs, and the legislature went back to work. So 1986, House Bill 491, they established the Impact Mitigation Program, and they authorized the department to adopt regs and set up the criteria for awarding MPRA grants. And then there was $24.5 million appropriated by the legislature to backfill or reconstitute the MPRA Special Revenue Fund. So after that, we have the program that we have in place today, and the question is, where did the money go? First, it went to the four impacted communities, and then after the impacted communities had first opportunity at the money coming from the feds, 50% went to the principal of the permanent fund, 0.5% to the schools, and the remaining amounts to the general fund. So if we look at this calculation, it clearly shows this is the calculation, and the next slide will show the conflict. So if we use FY06 numbers, we did it today by the way that our statute shows. This year, there's 31 FY06 starting July 1st. There's $31.6 million that we're receiving from lease payments in NPRA. We take $24.7 million off the top for grants that we'll see later and fund those. And we have a net receipt of $6.9 million. 25% of that goes to the permanent fund, 0.5% to the public school. And from a law in 1999, there's monies available for appropriation to PCE. And if there's any left over, it drops to the general fund. If we look at this and we compare the way our Constitution, and I would submit probably 999 people out of 1,000 in Alaska think we realize monies from NPRA. That's our Constitution. This is the way the statutes are set up because of federal law. So here's our $31.6 million, which is the FY06 receipts of monies. Under our Constitution, we would put 25% aside to the permanent fund, 0.5% to the school fund. The rest would be available for grants to communities. And it could, depending on what the grants are, have zero available for PCE, zero to our general fund. But because of the Carpinetti decision and the federal law that was imposed on us in 1980, it's done differently. We have $31.6 million available. The grants to the communities, they step in front of the permanent fund. They take 24.7. We then take the 25% of the remainder of this remainder, $1.7 million, 0.5% to the schools, and then there's $5.1 million left for PCE, and if none out of there, the drops to the general fund. So the thing that should concern all of us is this right here. Because there's four communities that step inside of the money coming from the feds, we're shorting the generations that follow us 80% in our permanent fund of monies coming from NPRA today, tomorrow, and until the law has changed. 80% is being taken away from my grandkids. That's because of the federal law and how we've ascribed ourselves. That is the problem, and that's a problem that we won't address today. But I would suggest to you that when you stand up and take an oath of office, that you're going to defend the Constitution. You're violating that oath right here. So we're going to leave that issue, and as troubling as it might be, it's not for today. And take a look at the current impact mitigation program. Any questions on how the communities have stepped in front of the state of Alaska?
Senator Wagner?
I understand that, but going back several slides, Carbonetti, when he ruled the way he ruled, why did not the state challenge on appeal?
I don't know.
They elected not to.
Apparently so. You're going to hear from people that will talk to you about the word received in our Constitution. It says money is received. So they will try to suggest to you that because the receipt takes place after the communities have stepped in front of the people of Alaska, that's where the receipt is taken care of. I would suggest that the receipt is when the federal government says you have $32 million for the people of Alaska. That's the receipt. It isn't when four communities or a governing body steps in front of that revenue stream, scoops out theirs first, and then it's suggested by many that's receipt. The rest of it is where you do the calculation of receipts. So be aware of that when folks talk to you. Current mitigation program. This is the current system that's put in by our law in 1986, and it's very simple. You do a lot to get it on here. This department puts out public notices and requests for applications in the fall or second half of the year to the NPRA communities, Wainwright, Barrow, Akasuk, and Nuitsit. The requests come back to the department. They evaluate with a committee of three and recommend proposals. DEC evaluates and recommends proposals to a review committee. That committee of three then sends the ones that they consider to be appropriate on to the commissioner. Commissioner requests funding from the legislature through the capital budget. So in the capital budget today exists a section of 24 point some million dollars that funds 24 different projects or some number like that. That's the system we have today. It's helpful to look to see, because we're going to talk about impact here, just what are the communities we speak of. Barrow population of 4,300, household income of about 67,000. These are the responsibilities that Barrow has taken on as a community. City of Wainwright, about 531 souls, $54,000 in income. City responsibility, they list none. City of Akasuk, here, about 200 souls, $66,000 in medium household income, and this is their responsibilities as a city. City of Nuitsit, population 430, medium income about 48,000 is here. And again, here's Alpine, and we'll see a better side of this here in a moment. So that gives you a sense of where the communities are and how they relate to NPRA on the far east of boundary. This is the distribution of monies out of the NPRA Impact Mitigation Program since 1980. The blue lines are all lease payments. There are no royalties yet, of course. But you can see here that this was the reconstitution that we talked about earlier, these two here. Then there was no monies coming because there was no development. And then this issue first arose in 2000, where there was almost $28,000 to distribute. And then it was dormant, and now it's come up. And now with all the activity in NPRA, this is the expected lease sales from the Department of Revenue this year, $50 million. This, and it's important to note, this is lease sales only. This has no royalty money in it. So we will continue to have lease sales like this, and then we'll start to get our royalties from oil production, which, of course, will be significantly on top of this. If you take there are five communities, it shows, it's really four because I think Anituvik Pass was in here at one time. But if you take 100, since 1980, it's been $117,899,000 dollars awarded to five communities. That includes the 24.7 request this year. So, you know, to kind of put this in perspective, I said, well, what if you take that, what if you take the distribution this year, 24,706, and divide it by the population that we're talking about in this area, 5,530 souls. That's about $4,500 per person. This is a grant program. No match. This is a grant. Somebody writes them a check. If you took that same proportion, multiplied it by the number of people in Anchorage, Anchorage on July 1st would get $1.239 billion. My town would get $380 million. North First Arctic Borough, 32.6. Bethel, 26.7.3. Sitka, Center Stephens, 39.3. Center Stephens, Kodiak would get $60.1 million grant. Center Wagoner, Kenai Borough would get $227 million grant. Center Cookish, Angoon, $2.2 million. You know, and you really have to stop, and this is where I say to myself, what we're really analyzing here is the spirit of the law versus the letter of the law. We understand, and underlying this whole thing is there may be some community's impact. I understand that. But does that mean that you pass out billion-dollar grants, equivalent of billion-dollar grants, while other places around the state are wanting for utilities, wanting for insurance, wanting for fuel? I think that violates the spirit of the law in 1980s. This is an important slide, and it shows you the magnitude of what we're talking about here. Look at Carl Moses' community dividend bill. It's $1,000 per person, and we struggle over that in this building. So I just want to leave this. This is a very lucrative, generous program put in place. And the way we're investigating this, why we're questioning it is a better word, is was the spirit of the law really to pass out this kind of money to a certain part of our population? I suggest not. So let's talk about how we got to where we are today. The importance, any questions on the current program?
Senator Wagner?
You haven't spoken to the federal side of the ledger on this. I assume 50% of everything that's been divided up so far on projects and everything, that's the state portion we're talking about. The other 50% of the federal portion is not touched by this formula. Is that right?
Yep. We never see it. It just stays
that
in the federal budget.
That goes to the federal government.
It just stays in the federal budget. Yep. We would only see it as it flows through federal appropriations. It stays in Washington, and they send us 50%. So let's talk about the importance of the little word impact. We should revisit for the moment how did we get to where we are today? And this is an important slide. The federal law in 1980 said in an allocation of MPRA funds, the state shall give priority to use by subdivision of the state most directly and severely impacted by the development of oil and gas. These underlined words in this slide are mine. The underlining is mine, emphasis added. Alaska state law, because of the Barrow decision, said the municipality may use the MPRA funds only for services to alleviate the impact of oil and gas development with MPRA and the regulations put in place. The impact means an effect reasonably attributable to MPRA oil and gas activities under the federal law. So it speaks to reasonably attributable to oil and gas, NPRA oil and gas activities. So the basis of law is fairly clear. So where is the NPRA oil and gas activity? You can see here, again, this is our slide. Here's Alpine that we're all familiar with. We'll see a little bigger slide here in a moment. TAPS again. Wainwright here is 220 miles from oil NPRA development. Barrow is 160 miles from here to there. Akasuk, 160 miles from there to there. And Nuitsuk, is 6 miles down the road. So it's helpful to remember this slide when we start to talk about impact. Impact requested for grants by development of NPRA activities. And what is the main oil and gas activity? The green is oil, the red is gas. Point Thompson, as you can see, here's the pipeline. This is all of our activity that's fed the state for 30 years. And this is the burgeoning activity over in NPRA. And the beige here is the NPRA boundary. And if you look up into here, you'll see here comes NPRA, the brown. There's New Itsit that we talked about, 6 miles away. You can see that Alpine has a little touch in NPRA. You can see that Fjord has none. And you can see Alpine West is just within NPRA. That is the extent of oil and field development today in NPRA. So we ask ourselves, impact. This chart begins to get us to talk about the bill in front of you today. You'll see here in a moment that the word impact has been relegated to a fairly minor requirement for the grants. And I'd like to suggest that before anything else can happen, scoring funding, that you first have to prove impact reasonably attributable to oil and gas activity in NPRA. So the project request comes forward. It goes to what is now going to be the committee suggested in the bill. And there's some questions asked, the four main questions. Is it a municipality? Is it directly or severely impacted? Is it reasonably attributable to development? And you can't use money for debt retirement. So if you meet those four criteria for today, you move on to the next step. If you don't, your application is rejected. The next step is set forth in the bill. Is it scored? And we'll score according to the way they do today, different ways to do it. But there's a description, whether it has a budget, whether it's sustainable, and the capability of the government to sustain or to manage the grant. If it doesn't fit, then it's not funded. If it is, it's recommended by the committee to go forward to be monies to be appropriated by the legislature. That's the broad outline of how I see the word impact being moved to the primary bar across which you must pass in order to qualify for scoring or funding. And we'll see why we'll see here in a moment why that hasn't been the case. Our regs today talk about impact to mean impact upon those eight items. And I only show this to show that it's very broad in its definition. You probably can't find anything in these communities, nor my community, or any of your communities that doesn't fit under that. So the definition of impact is very broad by the regulations. But impact, going back two slides, but impact is a minimum consideration. This is the impact program that we're dealing with today that has generated the requests that are in the capital budget today. The basis of the recommendation, this adds up to 100, and it's scored by three people from the department. You get 25 points for description of the project. You get 25 points for the impact, you get 20 points for a budget, you get 20 points for if it's sustainable, and you get 10 points if you have a government that has the capacity to manage the grant. Well, clearly, impact is only 25% of the whole consideration. Go back two slides. I think it's it's 100% to move to the next level. But more importantly, look at this. If you go back to 4 years ago, the impact was 50%. Impact 2 years hence moved to 30%, and now 2 years later is 25%. So somewhere along the line, I don't know, don't really care, but somewhere there's been a suggestion and a movement that impact really has a diminished part to play in this whole decision. And I would suggest to you, and the bill certainly suggests, that before you decide any of these things, you have to decide that there's impact reasonably attributable to oil and gas development. Here's some examples of the that bother me. Wainwright, 220 miles away, has put in a place to put in a request to replace and renovate the Wainwright Lagoon boat ramp. And this is what the committee looked at. Bless their hearts, they did their job. Absolutely what we've asked them to do. They said, well, there's impact on population, and quote, the construction of the oil production infrastructure and pipeline has driven up the growth of the population. But I say the population of Wainwright has increased by 54 people in 10 years. Employment and finances. This grant should be awarded because due to a decline in property tax revenues from aging oil and gas infrastructure, the borough cannot financially help the community. I would say the reduction in revenue is not due to MPRA development. In fact, MPRA development will increase the borough revenues. They said social and cultural values. The social disruption prompted by oil and gas development affects many traditional activities. But let's remember, Wainwright's 220 miles away from MPRA development. And last, fish and wildlife habitat. The grant is necessary because access to hunting areas would change if oil development reduces availability of subsistence resources. Past experience has shown, remembering now we're 220 miles away, past experience has shown that oil and gas activities and wildlife can coexist. So the question, were the impacts reasonably attributable to oil and gas development with the MPRA? The committee said yes. I would suggest no. And in fact, the committee rated impact in this case only 20 out of 100 points, but the project was recommended. Here's an example of a request from the city of Barrow. They want a place to put their old cars. The impact on visual resources. Many of the abandoned vehicles by the city of Barrow have allowed people to dump on city land or brought to Barrow during the oil boom. But the oil boom discussed was outside MPRA. The impact must be reasonably attributable to oil and gas development within MPRA. None of those cars or none of that has come from MPRA, maybe somewhere else. And that was the only impact listed. Project was recommended. Roller rink renovation to identify and cost to renovate the Barrow roller rink. Employment, although an estimated 4,000 jobs exist on the North Slope in oil and gas, only a fraction are held by Inupia. But the vast majority of the jobs in oil and gas industry are not reasonably attributable to NPRA development. Unemployment has an effect on unemployment. As the economic benefits of oil and gas development begin to decline, it leaves members less able to survive. But the decline in oil and gas development is not in NPRA. This petroleum reserve is just beginning to be explored. So we're mixing here Prudhoe Bay, all that over there, we're mixing it with the intent of the federal law, which is to have impact caused by development in NPRA. Roller rink renovation, social and cultural values. The decline in subsistence resources due to NPRA oil and gas negatively impacts the Inupiat culture. But studies are currently undertaken to determine the impact on wildlife, if any, to Barrow. And the Barrow residents are 160 miles from Alpine, from MPRA development. And last, the public service, the impact upon public service. Although the population has had a small net loss in the previous 5 years, the burden of the city of Barrow has not been reduced. So most of the workers connected with MPRA reside on the oil company production sites and not in local towns. And indeed, I'm told that people in Alpine don't even go to Nuitsin. They're restricted from doing so. So the point of these three is that there's this attempt to look at oil and gas development on the North Slope as a reason to go to the federal law for these multi-million, per capita, billion-dollar grants under the guise of impact because of doing something in MPRA. I suggest that's not what the federal government talked about. The federal government is silent on any sort of impact upon the North Slope from oil and gas development in Prudhoe Bay. There's some additional concerns when you get into this. The grants are funded as capital projects and the dollars don't lapse. But only 40% of the grants are for capital projects. The rest are for operating expenses of the four communities and for the North Slope borough. An example of throughout the program, there are problems with the flow of money and the tracking of money. But here's an example, and it's one of many. Funds are approved before old grants for the same purpose are expended. Here's an example. Well, there was an FY04 group operating grant of $1.75 million to survey wildlife. 15% of that has been expended, but in the proposal that sits in front of Senate Finance today, there's been approved a $2.46 million grant on top of what's left of that. That's just an example. That's one example of many types of things like that. Few grants follow timelines. Only 40% of the grants scheduled for completion on 6/30/05 have been spent. Awards are not based on successful completion of previous grants. An example of that is that a Nuitsic Cultural Center was granted a $939,000 grant to build a cultural center. And then in FY02, another $288,000 was awarded to operate it. And as of today, it hasn't even started yet. That should be a problem. So we've come through this, and so now we turn briefly to the bill itself. So how does Senate Bill 171 try to promote some sort of fairness and accountability to this program? This is a very important part of Justice Carpinetti's decision. In his decision, he says the duty imposed by the federal government ultimately falls upon the Alaska legislature, and it includes, these are my emphasis, it includes the duties to examine the claim needs of the subdivision arising from oil and gas development impacts, to evaluate them, and if the claim needs are found to exist, to rate them in order of priority and to meet them out of MPRA revenues. That's what Judge Carpinetti left for us in his decision, in the Barrow decision in the mid-80s. That's what this bill does. This follows his lead in what the legislature's part should be in MPRA grants. From a legal services memorandum, our attorneys, on March 18th, the legislature has the authority to examine the claims for financial assistance, to evaluate and rank the requests, to determine the appropriate amount of revenue for use by impacted municipalities, and to determine specific projects that are to be funded. The intent of this bill, and it's modeled after, we went back to 1974, and when they were building the Trans-Alaska Pipeline, and there was in 1974 a committee substitute for Senate Bill 1 had to do with providing emergency financial assistance for oil development impacted municipalities and providing for an effective date. So 171 follows the concept of this back in 1974, that there are impacts and they should be recognized and funded. So the intent language is in that it's intended legislature to provide temporary emergency financial assistance to municipalities for the purpose of meeting certain extraordinary operating and capital improvement expenditures necessitated by MPRA oil and gas development. To do that, this bill sets up a legislative impact review committee composed of three members from the finance, both finance committees, and not unlike a conference committee, where it takes two votes from each body to decide on anything. It consults with the department and then approves and forwards grant recommendations to the respective finance committee for awarding per Justice Carpinetti. The deposits to these unique funds, the permanent fund, the MPRA available school fund, are based on total MPRA receipts. And so the permanent fund and the public school trust fund are shown as equal participants subject to different percentages. We'll come back to that in just a moment. Grants are awarded for 1 year unless otherwise noted, and lapse money is appropriated into the permanent fund, school trust, or to the general fund. Now is the time to establish a method to fairly allocate the financial benefits of MPRA to all Alaskans, while at the same time mitigate the direct impact of development on certain communities as required by federal law. So with that, I thought I had a slide, but I want to go back for a moment. The in the bill, it contemplates that today the monies come from the feds, and the first crack is the communities. What we show is that what we do is we take the 25%, we show that it goes to our permanent fund, we take the monies needed for the communities. If there's money left over, it drops to PCE general fund. If the grants outstrip the available monies, then both the permanent fund distribution and the grants are brought down on a prorated basis until you reach the point where you have your money's available equals the money's going to the permanent fund, the grants, and the trust fund. So that's was that one slide there, and that's caused some discussion, but we'll deal with that because that's certainly that's a fair way to do it. So everybody pays a little if the requests are more than the money's available. So with that, I appreciate you staying with me for half an hour. Go through this. I'd be more than happy to answer any questions or whoever else would like to talk with you. Thank you.
Senator Wilkin, it's just a technical question. I was concerned about the membership and that how you reach a majority decision if you've got six people, but you've said made it very clear that it requires two people from each body to agree. So in fact, you're nothing can happen without four votes out of the six members.
Modeled after a conference committee, two majority, one minority, both houses.
Any questions? Senator Wagner.
Well, my first question would be, why no federal participation in the impact on communities? In other words, they skate free, get all their 50%, and they put the burden back on the state when it's their program to mediate the impact.
Right, your congressman. I wasn't there in 1980.
No.
I mean, I don't think there's any question that these communities just are just like every other community in our town or in our state. They get lots of federal help.
I was wondering if there was a federal definition of impact.
I don't believe so. Have you seen one?
Even the courts never said that there was a federal definition for impact. So it was really up to the Senate and the House in the earlier days to decide what the impact, quote-unquote, definition was.
That's the way I see it. And to put, remember that one where it stacked up the federal, state, and our regs? It looked like the legislature had asked the department to define impact. And then they don't really, when we showed you those eight different criteria, there just doesn't seem to be impact means. Sheila, would that be? There doesn't seem impact means. Or a significant impact means that there isn't that out there.
Senator Walker, can you just lead us through how this would compare with how we now do it in terms of grants? If I understand, I might not have said it very clearly, but if I understand, the department is much more involved in determining what grants are awarded, and in your proposal, it would be this six-member task force. Or could you just lead us through how it is done now and how it would be done differently?
The department would send out their notices as they do today and say, if you have an impact, then send us under this criteria, under these regs, what you think it is, and tell us obviously what it's going to be scored on. And then the department would handle that administratively. It would come in. And I would think they would then take those lists. There was 24 awarded, and I think, I forget how many, 40 requests this year. So they did the filter. So they would look at those, and they would filter them out as ones that, for whatever reason, didn't look to be appropriate. And then they would submit those to the Finance Committee, or to the new committee. That committee would do what amounts to the hard work and score them. And then that committee would report to each of their respective finance committees to be included into the capital budget. And then the finance committees in total then would vote on the funding.
Thanks. So like everything else, it would go through the entire finance committee and then through the legislature.
The final say on funding would be the finance committees in the capital budget. Thank you.
Further questions? Senator Kukesh?
Has there ever been a time in all of that process where there was any leftover money after those projects were viewed or and decided? When those four communities stepped up first, look, there's a 50% amount there. Any money ever been left over?
I don't think so. Sheila, was there a time left over? Is there? Can somebody just tell me and I'll tell him?
I believe, Senator, that in some cases there have been money left over and is reappropriated into other projects.
But I think your question was, when we dropped to the bottom,
was there
any ever went to the general fund?
Anything ever dropped out to PCE? Anything ever dropped all the way down to PCE and twice? Three times.
So three times to PCE? Is that okay? Three times PCE. Is your question,
yeah,
if it ever dropped to the general fund?
Well, I just want to know if anything ever made it by those four community grant applications.
We'll get those numbers. That's a good question. But I don't think anything has ever dropped to the general fund. Is anybody?
I'm not sure.
I don't think, Senator, that it's ever gone to the general fund. But I remember in 2000, Senator Adams helped us get some money to help with the PCE problem. We'll get those numbers and find out. It's a good question.
Thank you. Any further questions from the committee? Thank you very much, Senator Wilk. I appreciate the very complete briefing.
You're welcome.
And for the record, Mr. Kukesh, Senator Ellis arrived short after we started. Do we need some time to close this out? Someone who would like to speak to us, Susan Burke from North Slope Borough. Ms. Burke, are you with us?
I'm with you.
She's right. Oh. I expected you to be on the air, and here you are. Well, thank you. Identify yourself, please, for the record.
Mr. Chairman, for the record, my name is Susan Burke. I'm an attorney here in Juneau, sitting before the committee, and I represent the North Slope Borough and have done so for many, many, many years. And I'd like to talk to the committee about some of the legal issues surrounding the whole NPRA grant program, particularly as it relates to the provisions of Senate Bill 171. There are two sources, really, one primary source and one secondary source of the legal issues. The primary one, of course, is the federal statute that Senator Wilkin pointed out in his presentation. And as he suggested to you, you have all upheld, sworn an oath to uphold the Alaska Constitution. Well, if I remember your oath correctly, you've also sworn to uphold the U.S. Constitution. And the reason that I bring that to your attention is because of a provision in the U.S. Constitution called the Supremacy Clause. And it says if any federal law is supreme, any state law or state constitution notwithstanding. So to the extent that there are conflicts between the federal law that has been described to you and provisions of our state constitution, such as the permanent fund minimum 25% deposit, the federal law takes precedent. Judge Carpinetti ruled that. The Attorney General's office has opined to that effect. And the legislative legal has opined to that effect as well. So I want to talk about a couple of things. I want to talk a little bit about the permanent fund issue, and I want to talk about some of the other issues that relate to the grant process and the scope of the grants as it relates to the federal act. I think I've probably said about as much on the permanent fund issue as I can already. Judge Carpinetti clearly ruled that whatever percentage amount you apply, even if it's 100%, which, you know, by law you're entitled to do, the state constitution just says the 25% is the minimum, that percentage has to be applied after all of the municipal grants have been taken care of. That's what he ruled. I believe he was correct. The state didn't appeal the ruling, and as far as I'm concerned, is bound by that ruling. I mean, it's the law of the case on a specific issue. So I don't think there's very much more that can be said about that, except as Senator Wilkin told you, if you're not happy with it, you must write your congressman about it, because that's what the federal law requires, and that's how our court, local court anyway, has interpreted the federal law's requirement. So I view that as a closed issue. Can you, you know, once the municipal grants have been dealt with, can you appropriate extra money to the permanent fund? Sure you can. But the whatever percentage you choose, it has to be after all of the municipal grants have been considered and the appropriations dealt with. I have a handout. I did a memo to Dennis Roper, who's in charge of governmental affairs for the North Slope Borough, a couple of days ago, and he has authorized me to share it with you. And it really is a sort of section-by-section analysis of where I think there are legal problems with Senate Bill 171, particularly as it relates to the scope of the grants.
Melanie, can I have one more of those, Melanie?
Now, just by way of emphasis, the federal law is pretty clear that in allocating the state's share of these NPRA revenues, it's 50%. There is a mandatory duty to give priority to the impacted municipalities. That much we know. We also know that the duty, this mandatory duty, includes the duty to examine the claim needs of the subdivisions, to evaluate them, and if they're found to exist, to rank them in order of priority, and this is very important, and to meet them or satisfy them. If the needs are found to exist, then there's a duty to satisfy them out of NPRA funds, regardless of what other perceived needs there are in other areas of the state, regardless of one's desire to put more money into the permanent fund, again, because this is what a federal law requires. Now, Section 1 is intent language, and of course we all know intent language isn't binding as such, but it would at least be used as a court in interpreting other substantive provisions of the bill. And the intent language says it's the intent to provide temporary emergency financial assistance for the purposes of meeting extraordinary operating and capital improvement expenditures necessitated by NPRA development. I'd like to say two things about that. First of all, from what Senator Wilkin has told you, this is language that was drawn almost word for word from TAP's impact legislation in the mid-1970s. No federal law requirement for that. That was something that was entirely within the legislature's discretion to formulate what the money would be used for. In this instance, we have a federal act that provides for very broad uses of NPRA money: planning, construction, maintenance, and operation of public facilities, essential public facilities, and other necessary provisions of public service. Now, that's pretty broad to me, and to the extent that Senate Bill 171 is intended in its substantive provisions to narrow the permissible uses under the federal act, I would contend it's in conflict with the federal act. The uses that, the permissible uses that can be put to NPRA funds can't be any narrower under state law than they are under the federal act. Section 2 establishes the legislative committee, and there's nothing that says that you can't establish legislative committees if you want to look at these NPRA grants. That's perfectly fine. I would suggest a couple of things to you, though. I don't think future legislatures would necessarily be bound by what's in essence an organizational kind of provision. I mean, normally you establish your standing committees and what they're going to do by legislative rule, and each legislature has the authority to do that for its own two-year period. You could follow it if you wanted to, but you wouldn't be bound to do so. Secondly, there's nothing in the provision that sets up the legislative committee that tells it the rules it's supposed to follow. And we know that there are rules that must be followed from Judge Carpinetti's decision, the duties of examining the claimed needs, evaluating them, ranking them in order of priority, and if the committee finds that those things have been met, to recommend to the Finance Committee that they be funded. I mean, I think that's as much as you could ask the committee to do. I mean, the legislature is just as much bound by the requirements of the Federal Act as the department is in its review of these grants. So I would suggest to you, if you're going to switch the initial review process from the executive branch to the legislative branch, you need to have the standards by which the legislative branch is going to evaluate those grants in the statute somewhere. Section 3 of the bill makes several changes in the existing statute that governs the allocation of NPRA revenues. And I didn't quite understand what was contemplated. If you look at the bill on page 3, lines 3 through 7, reading it with the existing language and the new language, it talks about the department adopting regulations under which municipalities, the first edition, that are most directly and severely impacted by NPRA development. Let me say one thing about that. That does not track the federal statute. The federal statute says directly or severely. And to me, those are two very different things. So at a minimum, if that new language were to stay in there, I think in order to be consistent with the Federal Act, those two words would have to be in the alternative rather than the cumulative as they are here. But then there's an additional one that says, or that demonstrate extraordinary municipal and educational operating expenditures attributable to oil and gas development in the NPRA that are beyond the municipality's reasonable capability to meet from growth in receipts from current municipal revenue sources. I am not certain what the intent here is. If the intent was to limit municipal grants from all sources to alleviate or to address extraordinary municipal and educational operating expenditures, I would suggest to you that that is in conflict with the Federal Act. Because, again, if you look at the kinds of things that the Federal Act says that municipalities and the state, for that matter, can use NPRA revenues for, it's very, very broad. Again, planning, construction of essential and maintaining essential public facilities, and the provision of necessary services. To the extent that it's intended to be just an alternative to that, I don't think you really need it, because, again, the Federal Act is broad enough to cover not only extraordinary municipal and educational operating expenditures, but regular ones if they can be shown to have reasonable connection with impact from NPRA development. And while we're looking at the word development and in looking at the slides that Senator Wilken prepared, he seemed to be looking at actual wells and equipment in the ground, actual drilling, and so on. One of the arguments that the state made in the 1985 litigation, which I was involved in representing the North Slope Borough, the state said, well, these municipalities aren't entitled to any money until, you know, there's actual development and commercial production from the NPRA. And Judge Carpinetti said, no, I mean, development can mean many, many things. And furthermore, if you only look at current development, I think you are also misconstruing what the federal statute says. Remember, one of the things you can use it for is planning. And to me, planning suggests that you're looking forward to future development, and development isn't just you know, sucking oil out of the ground from oil wells. I mean, it's seismic, it's exploration. I mean, there are all kinds of things that go on throughout the whole region that, excuse me, can have impact far in advance of actual development and commercial production. On page 3, lines 21 through, actually, I can just take 21 through 27 together. The bill would delete the language that, in my view, is what provides compliance with the federal act under the current law. And if you take that out, I'm not sure what you're left with in terms of compliance. That it deletes the language that there be a requirement to give priority in the allocation of grants to municipalities that are experiencing or will experience the most direct or severe impact from NPRA development. That's straight out of the federal act. I mean, that's a mandatory trust responsibility. I mean, these are trust funds. I mean, it's like the mental health trust in that sense. And secondly, it would delete the requirement that the department shall fund all meritorious grant applications out of the money appropriated to it. Judge Carpinetti said that among the mandatory trust duties that the state of Alaska, including the legislature, has is if once you go through the evaluation process and you determine that a need is there and has merit, there's a duty to fund it. You can't just say, well, yeah, there's a need there, but you know, there's a need in Angoon or there's a need in Bethel that's more important in our view. That is a violation of the trust. And, you know, if you think it's unfair, again, I mean, it's a write your congressman kind of issue. That's what the federal act requires. You get this money in from NPRA, but it's subject to this trust condition. Section 4 of the bill, and that's on page 4, line 23 and 24, would add a provision to existing law that would prohibit municipalities from using any NPRA money for basic government operations. I mean, that's not defined in the bill, and I'm not sure what was intended to be covered. To the extent that it's just basic government operations, I would suggest that a prohibition against use of NPRA funds for those purposes would again be in conflict with the federal act, which permits NPRA funds to be used for planning, construction of essential public facilities, or any necessary provisions of public service. I mean, to me, that sounds a lot like basic government operations to me. I mean, again, there's going to have to be some reasonable demonstration of cause and effect between NPRA activities, and I hesitate to use the word development because that makes it sound as if it's just oils in wells in production, but, you know, NPRA activities. Then there's Section 5, and I'm not sure how this would work. It says grants may not be used directly or indirectly to reduce current municipal tax rates. I think that's very likely in conflict with the federal act as well. There's nothing in the federal act that says we're only going to allocate NPRA funds to poor communities. We're only going to allocate NPRA funds for things that they absolutely can't afford otherwise. I mean, it's an impact program, and if the grant request is reasonably related to impacts from NPRA activity, there's a duty to fund them. And I honestly don't know how you're going to tell whether something is indirectly reducing the mill rate. I think what you're going to end up with is municipalities that are otherwise eligible to apply for NPRA funds never to be able to reduce their mill rate under any circumstances for fear they'll lose their eligibility for NPRA grants. So I guess I'm not sure in practice how that's going to work. The last thing I want to mention is, and this is actually the only way in which, as I read, Senate Bill 171, that the permanent fund issue is directly implicated, and that has to do with if you've got more meritorious requests, then you've got NPRA money to cover them, then you ratchet everything down on a pro rata basis. That, to me, is clearly in conflict with the federal law because you're putting the impact grants for municipalities on an absolutely equal footing. That's what pro rata means, an equal footing with the permanent fund deposits and the public school trust fund deposits. And the federal law clearly tells us that the municipal grants have to be given priority over any other state uses. So those are my primary comments to you, and I'd be happy to answer questions. I should hasten to tell you before I volunteer to answer questions that I am not conversant with the day-to-day operations of the particular grant program. I don't follow them from year to year. Questions occasionally arise, but that is not my area of expertise, so I can't speak to particular grants or specific grants, but I can address legal questions if you have them.
Thank you, Ms. Burke. Appreciate your comments. Questions, Senator Wagoner?
Yeah, you mentioned in there when you were talking about impact some and production, and you referenced back to Mr. Wilkins discussing about where the current impact would be on that area and it's contained in that area. Then you said something about seismic and exploration. Now, are you saying that these funds could be used by some of the municipalities in this area to do seismic and exploration?
No,
what was your reference to those two?
Mr. Chairman, my only point was that the area of potential impact is broader than simply the areas where there is existing oil wells or drilling. In other words, I don't remember the mileages now, but, you know, let's say Wainwright at whatever it was, 160 miles from the nearest wells in the NPRA. Wainwright might well be very close to areas where seismic activity had taken place or other exploration. I'm related.
And the impact they would have on?
On the communities. Yes. Sorry for the misunderstanding.
Thank you. Any further questions?
Sir?
Senator Stebbins?
If I could. So under that strict interpretation, there doesn't appear to be much of anything that could be excluded.
I think there are any number of things that could be excluded. It's hard for me to say without having, I mean, it looks to me as if you're looking at a list of the applications for this year. And
oh, that's just this year, right?
And I haven't actually examined this year's. And I think my guess is if you get to the bottom of the list, there are probably things where there are impacts that the department at least has found to be minimal or non-existent. But without looking at particular grant applications, I'm just not in a position to comment on that. But yes, of course there are things that reasonable minds can conclude have nothing to do with NPRA impact. Reasonable minds might differ about it, but you can certainly, you could conceivably come up with a grant application that has nothing to do with NPRA.
Thank you, Mr. Burke. Yes, Senator Seven.
Looking at through the past list, I'm not an attorney, but I think it's pretty much understood that federal law supersedes state law and supersedes municipal right on down the line. But it also appears, as a casual observer, that this system here is pretty much abused, at least in my opinion. And it looks at the way this stuff is structured. If we want to build a capital, maybe we ought to build it up at NPRA area, and then wouldn't have to pay for it.
Mr. Chairman, I did not detect your question, but that's all I can say. I mean, I can't comment on that, Mr. Chairman. I mean, those are judgments that the department has made. If the legislature disagrees with them, you can take them up with the department. It's not a legal issue, I guess, is what I'm saying.
I'm not sure that officials in the area would want the capital located there, but I mean, it's one way to finance it, I guess. But, I mean, just looking at this list, I think something needs to be done. It just doesn't, when you start looking at impact, and I think it'd be pretty hard to argue that, you know, when there's development like this and there's an impact in particular areas, especially some of the really small towns, that there's an obligation by the state, regardless if the federal government says so or not, that the state has an obligation to mitigate those issues with the little communities because of just the sheer impact. But to me, this just looks like an abusive program above and beyond and then what I would consider a reasonable response. Another way of putting it, if there was $150 million, I'd expect to see $200 million in grant apps. If there was half a billion, I'd expect to see half a billion in grant apps. I mean, it's ridiculous.
Mr. Chairman, all I can say is to that is I'm not certain that would necessarily be the case. I mean, if there are $15 million or $20 million of legitimate impact funds and there's $50 million available or $100 million available, you're not under any obligation to pick a particular percentage of the total. But you do have to make, and the state as a whole has to make, in the sense of acting as a trustee, a good faith evaluation of these projects. That's what the federal law requires. The uses of the funds under the federal law are extremely broad, and again, it's a matter of if you don't like what the federal law says, you know, you need to go to Congress and talk to them about it. But having, you know, had Congress enact this law and imposed upon you this trust obligation, you're stuck with having to fulfill it.
Thank you, Mr. Burke.
Further questions? Yes, Senator Kukesh.
Is it your understanding that because these are federal lands and because there's a federal agreement out there, that the only way we really need can change this is either to go to court ourselves or have pass a law like this and have somebody like the city of Barrow file a suit again to have an explanation on this whole thing?
Well, yes, they are federal lands, and that's why the federal government gets to keep all the revenues from it. Under the old Federal Mineral Leasing Act, as you all know, you get 90% of those, but, you know, they've been less generous in recent times, and they determined that the state would only get 50% of the revenues that the federal government gets from these federal lands called the NPRA. And if the state were if the legislature were to enact new NPRA allocation legislation that the villages or the communities thought was in clear violation of the trust obligation, there probably would be another lawsuit.
Thank you.
Thank you. Just to help me understand, Ms. Burke, you've spoken several times about trust agreements, obligations. Could you just give us a little 101 description of what that trust agreement is?
Well, a trust agreement is not, implies a consensual sort of thing. This is really a trust obligation imposed by federal law, not unlike the trust obligation that is imposed with the mental health lands. I mean, there are the provisions of the Mental Health Trust Act, of course, are quite different from the provisions. And what it really means is that you have to follow the terms under which you're receiving the federal money. And in this case, you know, it's the words that are described in my memo and the words that Senator Wilken included in his presentation, and you have to follow those. You know, are they absolutely 100% crystal clear? No. Judge Carpinetti, I mean, that's one of the reasons that we went to court over it in 1985. Judge Carpinetti has put some sideboards on it for us. He may not have answered every single question, but the program has, at least from the community's perspective, certainly been working in a way that we think Congress intended it to work, and the statutes and regulations as presently constituted, you know, is there something here or there that we might quibble about, perhaps, in terms of compliance with the Federal Act, but by and large, it's in compliance.
Thank you very much. Any other questions?
Mr. Chairman, thank you, and members of the committee, thank you very much for your time.
Anyone else who wishes to speak to us at this time? Senator Wilkin, any comments you care to make before we end this, this hearing?
The time.
Thank you very much. Okay, we'll go on to the next issue that we want to deal with today, which is Hospital 229 Reinstatement of Indian Corporations. Do we have staff here to speak to that? Okay.
Chairman, members of the committee, Paula Bowl from Representative Foster's office. What you have before you is legislation which provides a one-time window for village native corporations to reincorporate after they have been involuntarily dissolved. It's important that they be able to reincorporate, otherwise they will not own the same assets granted in the Native Alaska Land Claims Settlement. And it's a simple bill. I'm sure at least a couple of you have seen it before, and I think Senator Kukesh may have even carried it before.
Oh, yeah, it was housekeeping.
Yep, housekeeping, exactly.
Thank you.
I'm happy to answer any questions.
Okay, thank you. It seems like I've heard it before, and I'm sure others have. Any questions? Is it Wolf? Not your last name?
Oh, LeBol.
I'm sorry, LeBol. Paul LeBol. Okay, thank you, Paul. Any other questions? Or any questions at all? Our statements, our concerns, agreements, disagreements? Okay. Well, thank you very much for your time. So we will hold this over to discuss at a later date. Anything else to come before the committee at this time? If not, thank you very much. Meeting's adjourned.